Republican and Democratic state lawmakers have gone home for the year, both parties with a sense of accomplishment. It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Lawmakers this session had a huge task ahead of them: restructure property taxes, reform education, and expand health insurance to low-income Iowans. They reached compromises on the big three issues. Both parties pleased. We'll talk with Republican Speaker of the House Craig Paulson and Democratic Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl about how these 11th-hour compromises came to fruition. In the second half, we'll talk with reporters who covered the session. Join our conversation after this news. It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Lawmakers faced a steep climb in this 2013 legislative session that wrapped up yesterday. For months, the Republican-controlled House and Democratic-controlled Senate seemed very far apart on the big issues, but deals were struck and lawmakers were able to compromise on reducing Iowa's commercial and industrial property taxes, reforming education, and providing health insurance to more low-income Iowans. Governor Terry Branstad was in the House of Representatives yesterday as lawmakers cast their final votes. Here's what he had to say to reporters right after adjournment.
This is a good example of bipartisan cooperation, making some tough decisions that have been put off for decades. This last bill, a significant property tax relief for the taxpayers of Iowa, is not easy. It's a long, hard battle. We're really pleased. I think this is a very significant step forward. Obviously, we're also pleased with the education reform and this new Iowa health and wellness plan, which puts Iowa in the forefront of our goal to be the healthiest state in the nation and refocuses the health system on things that are really going to help people to improve their health and well-being rather than just put more people in the system.
That's Governor Terry Branstad talking with reporters right after the legislature wrapped up business for 2013. Throughout the session, we've checked in with our first two guests, Republican Speaker of the House Craig Paulson of Hiawatha. He joins me on the phone. Welcome, Mr. Speaker.
Good afternoon.
Also joining us on the phone is Democratic Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl of Council Bluffs. Welcome back, Senator.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
River to River listeners, were you surprised lawmakers were able to compromise on these tough issues? Do you feel everything was adequately addressed in the compromises? Give us a call, 1-866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or let us know on Facebook. We're at Iowa Public Radio. So, Speaker Paulson, Republicans in your caucus, session after session, made property tax reform a top priority. What made this session the one that you were able to accomplish something?
You know, I really think you have to go back to the beginning of the session to do the analysis regarding the end of the session. And that is, I think that, you know, speaking for House Republicans, but I think it's probably also true of both parties in both chambers, instead of identifying specific things that were, you know, must-haves, instead we laid out goals and objectives. And then we worked together to find ways that we could together meet those goals and objectives. And that, I mean, I think that's particularly true in property tax, where House Republicans laid out a bill, is that this bill conforms to those objectives we have, and we're committed to those objectives. But if you got a better idea, let's talk about it. And I think that was had more to do with opening a door than closing doors, and that got us to the end.
And specifically, what do you like about this compromise on property tax?
Oh, I mean, I'm particularly excited about the message it sends to employers in the state of Iowa and outside the state of Iowa that we continue to be open for business. We want you coming here, investing in the state of Iowa, investing in our workforce. Homeowners are protected. It is something that the taxpayer is going to be able to sit down with their family budget or their business budget, and it's predictable. It's something they're going to be able to work into their business model. You know, I think this is a great step that the 85th General Assembly made.
Senator Gronstahl, what do you like about the property tax compromise?
Well, I certainly think there's a host of issues involved in this. This is an important issue for Iowans. We said at the start of the session, and I completely agree with the Speaker. Speaker Paulson and I both did our best with our caucuses to get people not to draw lines in the sand and to say, hey, there are challenges out there, policy challenges kind of across the board that we're going to struggle with this session, but let's not draw lines in the sand. So he never did, I never did, and we occasionally some of our caucus members would, but we tried to guide people back to working together. What I like about this bill, and I live in a border community where those kinds of competitive issues are really quite important in terms of economic development and attracting investment in our communities. But I got to tell you, we also said there had to be something in this for the working poor in our state, and so there's an earned income tax credit there, a very significant doubling of the earned income tax credit in the state of Iowa. I think that's great. I think that'll put money back into the economy. We said at the start of the session that with our healthy state treasury, if we were careful, we could afford to make both targeted tax cuts in ways that would help grow our economy, and that we could also invest in the workforce. And Speaker Paulson mentioned that. We are investing in our workforce. Major new initiative in terms of skilled workers in the state of Iowa. So we've done both. We've cut taxes in targeted ways that will grow our economy and invested in our workforce to make sure they have the skills for 21st century jobs.
Now, Senator Gronstahl, there were six Democrats in your caucus that voted against the property tax compromise. One was Ames Democrat Herman Kornbach, who was the last to vote. I asked him if he was weighing his decision right up to the very end, and he said he was, based on a conversation he'd had over the weekend with the Ames city manager. Here's what he had to tell me.
According to his calculation, when fully implemented, this property tax proposal would cost the city of Ames about $3.5 million a year, which at current levels is about 14% of the city budget. So, do I want to face a 14% increase in property tax rates? Because if you shrink the base to maintain the same revenue, you're going to need to raise rates. And I'm just opposed to raising property tax rates. I have said all along, and very consistently and very loudly in my home community, if the state promises tax relief, the state ought to pay it. And shoving the bill to cities and counties is unconscionable.
Now, that's Ames Democratic Senator Herman Kornbach. Senator Gronstahl, if this is the argument against the compromise, how did you get the majority of your members to vote for this property tax compromise?
Well, everybody can take figures and play with those figures to the extent they want to play with them. And I do understand that some cities see some losses in this. We do not reimburse the change in apartments from commercial to residential taxes. Although, personally, I think that is good policy. If I can afford to buy a home, I pay at approximately half the value of that home's market value. If I can't afford to live in a home and I rent an apartment, I pay at 100% of that value. I don't think that's good policy on the front end. But I'd also say local communities are losing that revenue as we speak. Apartments are converting to condos or to cooperatives, and when they do that, they escape the commercial tax and drop down to the residential tax, which again is about half the rate of commercial. So local communities are kind of counting that against us on the balance sheet, but they're already losing it. The marketplace is taking that away. Almost nobody in this state is building market-based rental properties. They're all building condos or co-ops, and the existing apartment buildings in the state are converting. So the actual loss to local governments is and was going to occur whether we pass this bill or not. And so, in one sense, counting that on the ledger against us is a bad in some senses isn't fair. But overall, the vast majority of the changes we make here are reimbursed by the state, and in a very solid way. It's a standing appropriation on the one hand for the governor's piece that rolls back commercial values 10%. It's a standing appropriation that is not subject to across-the-board cuts. And on the other side of the ledger, the one where the Democrats said we want to really target some of this to small businesses in this state, that one is fully reimbursed because it's a direct state tax credit, not a credit at the local level. So the vast majority of the impact of this bill to local governments portion that wasn't, those communities were already losing.
Another compromise was on health care. We'll move on to health care. For months, we've been hearing how far apart Democrats and Republicans were. Democrats in the Senate wanted to expand Medicaid. That's the joint federal-state health care program for low-income people. Republicans in the House passed Governor Branstad's plan that would ensure fewer Iowans and cost patients more out of pocket. But a compromise was reached on a third plan, and this is not Medicaid expansion. Speaker Paulson, what is it?
Well, I think it is healthier Iowans as we move forward through this. We took, you know, the existing Medicaid program, the one that is in place today, I don't think anyone would defend as necessarily an efficient system. And so we went through the policy, and it was Republicans and Democrats sitting down at the table and figuring out opportunities to not only make it a more efficient program, but also make sure that it was accessible by Iowans and that they were going to be able to plug in a way that increased their personal health and the health of their family. Once we got through that and got to the funding, you know, then it all actually, once we got through that hurdle, it fell in place pretty quick.
And there is a waiver that has to be applied for first, correct?
That is correct. One of the things the bill does is give Governor Branstad the authority to apply for a waiver. We think this has the potential to be a model for the country, and it's most definitely an Iowa solution to this question that was put before us. Whether you consider it a problem or an opportunity, it was a pretty serious public policy question that was put in front of us. And we came up with an Iowa solution, and the governor, I expect, will sign the bill and be applying for a waiver from the federal government.
Now, the state's hoping to get federal funding, but that's been a big concern that the federal funding would be sustainable. And if the feds don't live up to their promise, if this isn't a Medicaid expansion, and there was a concern there, what's changed to make your caucus pleased with taking the federal dollars in this case?
Well, obviously, we use federal dollars all over in the state of Iowa. They pass through, you know, a significant number of education dollars. There's road funding. There's other health care dollars. It wasn't simply the fact that, you know, this had federal dollars involved in it. It was that the potential and them basically promising that we're not going to fund this in the out years or that potential exists was a concern for us. So the bill has a mechanism in place where if we get in a situation where it becomes unaffordable, for the taxpayers of Iowa, then there is basically an out mechanism, and so that addressed that concern.
And Senator Gronstall, do you feel that you adequately reached across the aisle on this compromise when there was still quite a bit of opposition from Republicans in the Senate?
Well, I would say this. We pretty much, almost by definition, everything we do has to be bipartisan because there's Republican control of the House and Democratic control of the Senate. What we did, again, is we didn't draw lines in the sand. We said it's incredibly important that 150,000 Iowans get access to health care because to the extent they don't, that doesn't mean they don't have health care problems. It just means they show up in emergency rooms and in very expensive ways cost the system money. And those costs are passed on to everybody else in higher insurance rates. Everybody else, because those facilities, hospitals don't get to just absorb that bad debt and somehow it disappears, so it has to be paid for. So in the end, it's reflected in hospital rates and other provider rates. So we thought it was incredibly important to get those 150,000 Iowans into the system. Emergency room care is the most expensive form of care. And so, again, we didn't draw lines in the sand. We didn't have to say it has to be our way. It has to be Medicaid expansion. We worked, and both sides came together. Here's what I tell you. Instead of pursuing hardcore ideological politics, reasonable people of good faith sat down. We agreed with the governor from the start on those efforts to make sure that we have a system that leads people towards healthier lifestyles, disease management, all of those kinds of things that would drive down the cost of health care for everybody in our state. So we worked together. We decided not to pursue gridlock or partisan advantage in the next election. We decided to solve problems this session, and I'm proud of the majority party in the House. I'm proud of the majority party in the Senate. We chose instead of politics to pursue policy this session. And that's why you see on a host of issues us solving problems instead of breaking down into partisan gridlock.
Listeners, what do you think of these bipartisan deals? Give us a call, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or go on Facebook. We're at Iowa Public Radio. Also want to move down to the next one. We're just kind of firing these out. But education reform, what's the compromise there? How will students benefit from the law? Senator Gronstahl.
Well, I think students will benefit in a variety of ways. I would tell you, I think morale in schools has been low in the last several years because of the lack of resources. And so in school districts, in classrooms across the state of Iowa, they were losing teachers' aides. They were losing paraeducators. Classrooms were becoming more crowded. And so we think the resources we're providing are going to help with morale. And then, in addition, we're working on a variety of things in terms of career pathways to make sure that teachers have pathways to share their skills with each other, to develop better teaching overall, and to get better results for students. So I think we said from the start of this session, even from last year, we talked about an effort to make sure kids could read by the end of the third grade. I think we're particularly thankful that there are resources put into this budget this year that are going to be about helping intervene for those kids that are lagging in the early elementary grades to make sure that by the end of the third grade they're able to read. And we think that was an incredibly important piece of this. But we also think the career pathways are promising in terms of attracting good people to the profession. So I'm excited about what we're doing in K-12 education. I think there's going to be real difference in terms of student achievement out there. And I'd also say this is a multi-year effort. Other states that have succeeded in improvements, they have not viewed it as a 1 or 2 year deal. They've viewed it in the long term as we've got to commit to staying on top of educational achievement. And so we fully intend to do that. We'll be back next year with additional things. But this was a really big first step. And again, it was where we chose not to let partisan gridlock lead us away from solutions. We sat down, we worked together, and we came up with, I think, legislation that's really going to make a difference in classrooms across the state.
And Speaker Paulson, there was a lot of talk about homeschooling there at the last push with education reform. How do you feel that homeschool is being represented in this final compromise?
Well, I mean, I think very well. We also recognize that family and parental choice was important, and this bill supports that. You know, I want to back up, though, to something Senator Gronstahl said, and that is the decisions that we made at the leadership level and the decisions that, in particular, the two majority caucuses made, and that was to focus on public policy for Iowa. That doesn't just happen. That's something that we sat down and made a decision that we were going to be focused on. And when you look at this session, you know, passing a budget that balances ongoing revenue with ongoing expenses, makes some very strategic one-time investments, pays off debt. That's a successful session. And then you throw the property tax reform and relief bill on top of that and all the things that we accomplished there on behalf of Iowans. That makes it a profoundly good session. Then you throw education reform on top of that and the fact that we think over the course of time, and I think this is going to prove out, that the classrooms, the public school classrooms across the state of Iowa, we're going to see the outcomes elevated. I think it was a bill that instead of focused on, you know, punishing the system, it was a bill that focused on how can the General Assembly plug in and be helpful to the classroom teacher, be helpful to the school districts in elevating those standards. I mean, I think that makes it just, that probably gets it to a landmark session. And then you throw in the work that we did on the health care and those pieces. It was a serious commitment, I think, by the two majority caucuses. It was a commitment at the leadership level to get big things done for Iowa. And, I'm really excited about the things we did. I think the senator's correct. We'll come back. We'll have pieces we need to tweak. But we moved the state of Iowa forward this year, and I think there's a lot to be excited about.
So what was the driving factor that led to the decisions to strike these compromises? I mean, what did it?
You know what? I'll go back to something I learned very early on, and that is good public policy is good politics. And we decided to make sure that we did the analysis and approach these questions from that standpoint. As long as we're making good public policy on behalf of Iowans, that's what they pay us to do. And we're paid to have them in our mind as we move forward, not an election that's coming up, not all those things that we often see them in Washington, D.C. get distracted by. We didn't let that happen.
Well, you bring up Washington, D.C., and a lot of times your name gets thrown around as a possible candidate for Congress. Are you considering a run, Mr. Speaker?
You know, all I've said on that is that once session was over, you know, I'll go through and review those decisions. Session's been over for just about 24 hours now.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is I'm getting reacquainted with my family. I've now figured out where the furniture is in my own home again. And then I'll start working through some of those things.
Okay. And Senator Gronstall, I'm curious, how confident are you that the members of your caucus and you, when you go home, that your constituents will be happy with the work that you did this session?
Let me say there are so many big issues that that we slogged through and worked hard on this year and got done that you've just heard a whole host of issues from both of us. But there's some things that are just below that are really stunning. We did a skilled worker initiative this year. That's going to help our community colleges make sure workers have the skills they need for 21st century jobs. This was the best year ever in the history of the state for community colleges. This is the first year in 30 years that tuitions at our Regents institutions won't go up. The first year in 30 years. We made dramatic new investments in mental health. As you know, we're transitioning a mental health system from a county-based delivery system to a regionally-based delivery system and put a bunch of new money into that. There are some really wonderful accomplishments. If we had this to do on our own, we would have done it very differently. And I'm sure if the Republicans had it to do on their own, they would have done it very differently as well. But the truth is the voters, I said in one of our last meetings as we were still working through the health care stuff, that the voters gave us partners not of our own choosing. The voters put us in a room with people that we didn't choose to have there, but that's what the voters did. And the voters didn't expect us to just play politics with that. They expected us to work together. So there are compromises here, and some of them are hard. Some pieces of this is hard to swallow for us, and some pieces of it was hard to swallow for the House Republicans. But we set aside partisanship and said, the voters gave us a job, and they said, do something. And they really said, if you were listening, don't act like Washington, D.C. And we didn't.
So would you say that your working relationship has benefited from time between you two? I mean, I was seeing both of you running back and forth from chamber to chamber to talk about this. Has there been experience working together that's helped the relationship in these leadership meetings, Speaker Paulson?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. And that was, you know, one of the things that I talked about early in the session was that some of the things that we had to work through in 2011, we've already worked through those. And that would also include just the dialogue at the leadership level. It's another one is just below the surface is the commitment we made to water quality, nutrient management, REAP, some of the things we did. I mean, it just keeps coming and coming.
And real quick, Senator Gronstall, you see it the same way? Real quick, we've got to wrap up here. But
absolutely. You have to wrap up. Speaker Paulson and I have developed a very good working relationship. Even though we have partisan differences, we know how to work together, and we know how to get our members to work together, and I'm proud of this session.
Okay, thanks so much to Republican Speaker of the House Craig Paulson of Hiawatha and Democratic Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Coming up, River, we'll talk about covering the 2013 legislative session. That's coming up. I'm Clay Masters. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Lawmakers in Iowa have gone home for the year. The big story out of the 2013 legislative session that wrapped up yesterday was that they got a lot done. There were compromises on ensuring more low-income Iowans, reforming property taxes, and revamping the state education system. As we just heard from Speaker of the House Craig Paulson and Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall, both Republicans and Democrats seem pretty pleased with the deals. Here with me in our Des Moines studios are two reporters who, along with myself, have been covering the 2013 legislative session. Associated Press reporter Catherine Lucy, welcome.
Hey, good to be here.
And Mike Weiser, a reporter with Lee Enterprises. His stories are published in a number of papers around the state, including the Sioux City Journal, the Quad City Times, and there's a host of others. Mike, welcome to River to River.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
River to River listeners, what's your take on this legislative session? Are you pleased with the compromises? Give us a call. Join the conversation, 1-866-888-8888. 780-910-9100 or tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also reach out to us on Facebook and comment there. So, Catherine, like me, this was your first legislature in Iowa session that you've covered. And what a year with how much they got done. What was your impression of the session?
Well, it's been a busy year so far for these guys. Yeah, I started back in January, and one of the things that's interesting with Iowa compared to a lot of states, it's one of just three where the legislature has divided control. So you have Democrats running the Senate and Republicans in the House. And it really forces it forces them to try and compromise. And when we started back in January, there was a lot of talk about how they were not drawing lines in the sand. They wanted to work together. They were looking to make compromise. But what I think is impressive this week is that they didn't just talk the talk. They really did walk the walk. They actually found compromises, and compromises where everyone came away with a little bit of what they were looking for.
And Mike, you have a few sessions under your belt. How does this fare to the other years that you've covered?
Well, I think Catherine's point is a great one. You know, with a divided legislature compared to Washington, D.C., and that's what a lot of the lawmakers are and the governor are saying now. They're divided just like – Congress is divided just like the Iowa House. Congress has gone the path of gridlock, it seems. The Iowa legislature has not, and they have some big issues that have been longstanding: education reform done, property tax done, expansion of health care. And, you know, it's one of the things that's interesting about this that I did notice from this session, although they got a lot off the table, it didn't happen until the last week. And a lot of it was done sort of behind closed doors. It was done in the lobby. It was a negotiation between lawmakers, which I think to a certain extent left the public out of the process. I think of education reform. The last time that we had an education reform meeting was about 3 weeks ago. That was the last time we had an education reform conference committee. And then 2 days ago, they say, hey, we have a deal, and we go. And that leaves the public a lot of time to have to catch up to see what happened.
I know that I was really surprised when all of a sudden there was a health care compromise. I thought that, you know, I remember having Senator Pam Yoakum, a Democrat from Dubuque, and the governor's top health care policy aide, Michael Buslow, were both sitting where you guys are. And I said something about speculating about a special session, and both of them were shaking their heads aggressively, like, no, we're not going to do that. And I was thinking, yeah, right, you guys are going to be back. You just wait. And then sure enough, no, there was a compromise. And how did that compromise happen? I mean, we were seeing Senator Amanda Reagan from Mason City bouncing back to the House to talk with Republican Majority Leader Linda Upmeyer. That compromise seemed to be between two senators that I wasn't even really watching. I had my eye on Yoakum and Walt Rogers.
No, and that one is really interesting. It came together very late, and there was even less public discussion about that deal than some of the others, despite tons of public hearings more generally about Medicaid. And I've talked to both those lawmakers, and I think a lot of it came down to the two of them have had a longstanding relationship. They've been in the legislature about the same amount of time, and they come from the same part of the state. And they see a lot of the problems that their constituents have in terms of healthcare access. And they kept talking, and they tried to figure out ways to, you know, what areas could they find common ground on. And they're both pretty practical, no nonsense, let's get it done type of gals, and they really did not leave. And I mean, I think that's one of the most impressive and surprising deals that they managed to get done.
Well, one of the keys to that, though, is Governor Terry Branstad. He had long time said on this Medicaid expansion, on this health care, we don't trust the federal government to keep paying this and to keep up with the funds, so we're not going to accept federal money. Democrats and Republicans were sort of united in the, I guess, the questioning of that logic, because they brought up questions like, well, why are we not accepting health care money when we accept highway money? And we take
money,
all this stuff, and so why do you do that? So you had the governor who sort of backed off of that. Now, he's not calling it Medicaid expansion. The Republicans are definitely not going to call it Medicaid expansion, but it's the same dollars that you would have used for Medicaid expansion are coming to Iowa to use this plan.
The bottom line is they're taking expansion money, and more people in Iowa will get health care as a result.
And the governor benefits from not having it called Medicaid expansion, so he doesn't have to say that he took the expansion.
Yeah, and yep. They're putting some things into the plan that he had wanted. There's going to be some health incentives. There is an opt-out if something changes with the federal money. So he can claim victory on those points. I mean, like all these things, it's a compromise where everyone is able to walk away saying they got something.
You know, one of the things that's related to this that I thought was real interesting that I don't think the governor is necessarily going to want that has to do with health care is the Health and Human Services budget is one of the last bills, and it always gets tied up over Medicaid funding for abortions. And this year, the compromise turned out that if you are in cases of rape, incest, severe deformity,
life of the mother,
abortions are allowed under Medicaid. The change this year is in Iowa, if this law goes through, is that those abortions are allowed only if the governor signs off on this. So now you have the governor of the state of Iowa who has to okay the abortion, essentially,
if
he doesn't veto it.
He okays the reimbursement. Mm-hmm. So the abortion would happen and then he would have to – I mean, that's – depending on who you ask, that's technical language change or it's a real policy change. And I think that one has to kind of play out and we'll see how it works in reality if it becomes law.
And Republicans didn't have the votes to pass that. We were in a minority leader of the House's office late on – my days aren't even straight. It was, I guess, Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, Thursday morning, right?
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, the Republicans have come to – well, majority leader in the House, Linda Upmeyer, has come to me. They said, we don't have the votes. And then, you know, it looks by the vote in the morning that they did have the votes because
– with then some. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what does that say about the process there that even when there seemed like it could have gone – the train could have gone off the tracks that, well, there was a compromise reached and it over – seemingly overwhelmingly.
I think that has to do a lot with – I think there's several things. It has to do with momentum. They weren't looking forward to going into – and sometimes this gets overplayed, you know, the importance of holidays. They say, oh, you guys overplay that in the media. But I can guarantee you that every person that we cover up there who's elected has at least three or four Memorial Day parades that they got to march in.
Well, then there's high school graduations.
High school graduations.
All over the state.
Trips. Senator Black is going down to Vicksburg.
That's right. Yeah.
And so there is pressure to keep momentum going when you can get it done. And I think that plays a role. I think also what plays a role is like Catherine had mentioned, how well some of the leaders who are responsible for whipping their members into shape can how well they agree with each other, how well they can forge a compromise that people can live with. Not necessarily embrace, but they can live with.
And speaking of compromises that people can live with, the property tax deal, during the debate over a property tax compromise, Senator Rob Hoag, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids, said just because it's a compromise doesn't mean it's a good one. Hoag said other things like education, infrastructure, and public safety could suffer as a result. And he went on to say this.
You know the thing that ruined businesses in my district? The flood of 2008. And yet, have we done what we need to do to safeguard those businesses from future disasters? Absolutely not. And you can smirk about that if you want to and laugh about it. But when you see people losing their jobs and their life's earnings wiped out by a disaster because government failed to act, that's our responsibility.
So, Catherine, what does this say about the cost of the property tax deal to local governments? I mean, Hoag was bringing in all these different funding mechanisms that would suffer.
Well, it's an expensive piece of legislation. It's a big tax cut, and there's to property taxes. There's a variety of pieces to it, to other taxes, tax credits, and a lot of those things come through local governments and. Some of the cut is going to be reimbursed, but not all of it. And so the state is going to provide some money to try and...
So the reimbursement comes from those state funds.
Whatever local governments are losing because of lost tax revenue, the state's going to get some of it back to them, but not all of it. And that's what Hoag and others are concerned about. Advocates for cities are saying they could take a hit. And then, of course, the governor's folks and supporters are saying, well, actually, you know, this could juice business. This could incentivize people. This might not be as bad as you're saying. Some of those things are hard to know completely. But, Hoag has a point, and it could affect local cities' ability to pay for a whole variety of basic services, police, fire, you know, what have you. And, you know, I'll have to see if the advocates of this deal, you know, are right that it does actually, you know, produce benefits in other ways.
On education reform, Mike, you spent a lot of time reporting on this throughout the session. How do the two plans combine? What are we going to see impacting teachers and students? And do you think that it's going to make real change when, you know, both sides were saying this is what's going to propel us forward and the other plan's not going to work? I mean, what are we going to end up with here?
This is, you know, it's interesting to see how this plays out. I think they've all said, both sides and the governor's office, and when I say both sides, I mean the legislative sides and the governor's office, has said that this is a long process. We've had 2 years of education reform bills. Last year's that had passed was
It was a bunch of studies, wasn't it?
It was a lot of studies. There were some technical changes, but I mean, this was this one that they did Thursday or Wednesday. This was the big one, and this was the one that you know, teachers are going to be evaluated, given raises, promoted differently. There's going to be more money for schools if you go on to different career paths. There's going to be more money for teachers who are starting out. There's a number of more studies in terms of how everybody should be evaluated. There's a lot of accountability provisions. The real big winners on this, I think, are homeschool parents who have a whole bunch of more freedoms than they had before. They can teach driver's ed. They can teach kids who are not in their school. They don't have to report to the state in terms of what they're doing. The interesting thing about this, I thought, ultimately, was the governor got really what he wanted in most sense, because where the negotiating points ended up being is things that the Senate added versus things that the House added to the governor's original plan. So those guys were fighting around those guys and ladies were fighting around the margins there in terms of what the Republican caucus wanted and the Democratic caucus wanted, where the governor's initial proposal went through pretty much unscathed.
Yeah, and so, Catherine, do you see it the same way, or how, what do you make of the reform?
I think the thing that's interesting with the education deal is how Iowa, compared to a lot of states, is really prepared to put a lot more money into schools. I mean, and there's strings attached to this and the way they have to do things, and it has to be, you know, the governor wants to see certain types of spending. But they're, I mean, like the property tax deal, they're prepared to really put down a lot of money here. And one of the reasons, I think, besides Iowa really being a state that has a sort of a long-held tradition of focusing on education, it's a state that also is in a very good fiscal position. So they have surplus budget funds, they have money to spend, and they really are looking at where do they want to put this. And so this is a big bill.
What I think is interesting, too, on this, I don't think you could have asked for a more serendipitous coincidence than for the education chief, Jason Glass. The day that this reform bill passes, he accepts a job as a superintendent in a Colorado school.
This director of education.
Director of education. Came here 2 years, came here with Branstad. Terry Branstad handpicked him out from a consulting job to basically, Jason made a reputation for himself as someone who could get a pay for performance deal passed like he did at his old school districts. He was working as a consultant. Branstad picked him out, says, I want you to be the guy to run my education reform. He also picked up Linda Fando, who works in the administration as a special advisor. And the interesting thing about this is I had talked to Jason, this was back in 2011, and I said, you know, so what's your plan? He says, my job here is to be a lightning rod for the criticism and then get out of town.
Oh, really? Okay.
And that's really what he did. Yeah. He became a lightning rod for criticism. He reached out. I mean, you saw him on Twitter. You saw him any Rotary Club in any town that would have him. He'd hop in his state car, and he was pushing the way in a way that we hadn't seen these education chiefs work before, who were mostly hung around Des Moines and worked on policy and talked to lawmakers. This guy went out, did his thing, made some friends, made some enemies, and then got out of town.
Got out of town. And it's interesting, too, many of the teachers that I've spoke with over the course of reporting on ed reform have talked about, you know, pay me what you want. I want more relief in my classroom. I need people here to help and reduce class sizes. And, you know, Senator Kornbach, the top negotiator for education was saying that, you know, this bill will help reduce some of the class sizes and there will be relief in that way. So of interest point there.
Right. Well, and I think like all the other issues we're talking about, I mean, this is a compromise deal. I mean, the governor's original proposal of this might have been a little more extreme. And in previous years, I think, Mike, you could speak to that. But they had to find a plan that could get through both chambers. And so it does stuff that the Republicans and Democrats want and can live with.
It seems to give more carrots than sticks in a lot of instances in terms of if you do this, then you'll get this more money. And you're automatically going to have this base level to work with, as opposed to, I think, what some of the other plans were if you don't do this or just in general, we're coming down hard on you.
Now, we've been talking a lot about everything that got done. Next year, 2014, could be a different story with an election. Here's Governor Branstad, what he said after adjournment yesterday, talking about what next year has to bring.
Election year or not election year, we all have a responsibility to represent the people and to work together. So I guess my feeling is there should not be excuses. We always need to work together. And I think people took that responsibility real seriously. And I think we wanted to show Iowa can do things different than the way they do things in Washington, D.C. We can solve problems instead of spending all our time in conflict.
But with a governor's race, a Senate seat, and a number of state lawmakers likely vying for United States Congress, with Bruce Braley's seat as he's running for Senator Harkin's vacated spot in the Senate, are state lawmakers going to get anything done next year? I think is a big question from a lot of people.
Well, one of the questions is, what did they leave on the table, right? That's what we go back to. And I think the biggest thing that they left on the table, I can think of two that come to mind. One is sort of the governor's plan. He had an anti-bullying summit this fall. We had bullying legislation that didn't go anywhere. He's promised to have that again. So we'll see what happens with that. Possibly one that affects more people in this state is we have a backlog of $250 million in annual roads and bridges that go
on. The gas tax.
Exactly. They go unrepaired, I guess you would say. They get put on a wait list. This year there were a couple proposals, possibly a fuel tax. That's what a governor's commission recommended last year. There was a couple other plans about getting reimbursements. Those things, because these big issues that we had talked about, such as property tax, education reform, expanding health care, those are off the table now. So now you have more focus on these. And I don't think that anybody who holds elective office really wants to have a focus on how we're going to raise more revenue.
I also just think people do less policy work in an election year. I mean, the session is shorter. People have other focuses. I think a part of the push to get some of these big things done this year was also probably that they knew next year people would have other things going on. So I think it's highly likely it'll be a less policy-heavy session next year.
And also, I mean, we talk a lot about how Iowa has a surplus in funds. I mean, is there – you think there'll be more of a push to try to do something with the reserve that the state has?
Well, some of these items are going to do something. I mean, the property tax deal, that's over the years, that's going to, I think, you know, affect the surplus. And that included some other items like income tax breaks and things like that. So I think that's where some of it's going to end up.
And I think you can expect, whether it's an election or not, whenever there's a surplus, you're going to look at one party's going to say, the Republican Party is going to say, we need tax cuts. This is money that I think even Craig Paulson has taken to calling a surplus an overpayment by the taxpayers.
Right, right.
Using his semantics. And I think Democrats say, hey, you know, maybe we could do more money for education, because although we are putting money for education, we're still about 1,000 below the national average or whatever. I think that U.S. Census data came out just last week. Or we could put more money towards these programs to help people who need help. And so if you have this big stack of money, people are going to want to find ways to spend it.
You know, and at the end of any kind of climactic thing that you cover, I know for me, with the election last year, now, as you saw from the different speeches that were given in the Senate and the House, people reflecting on the session, what are some of the moments that you guys will remember? I know, a humorous moment. I remember at crunch time, as we're trying to get all these stories out, I'm trying to file for All Things Considered, and I record my stories at the press bench, and every time I'd go to record, Senator Tsang would be playing his harmonica, and I couldn't, it's just this recess, and there's this madness going on as we're trying to figure out what's going on, and I can't even record a darn story because there's a ridiculous harmonica playing. I mean, are there things that stick out in your mind as funny moments or anything that you'll remember?
You know, I was stunned by how much free food there was in the Capitol every day, none of which I could eat.
Right,
I just
exactly.
say, constantly walking past buffets.
Right. Mike?
You know, I think, and this is almost an annual moment for me, I'm sometimes struck by some of the poignancy and the artfulness that some legislators speak, and I always question myself if I'm being taken for a ride by someone who's a professional politician or a professional speaker. But there were some very impassioned speeches this year in these debates in committee. Sometimes you had lawmakers in tears talking over the abortion, mm-hmm. Talking over mm-hmm. abortions. I mean, you had over education, and it gives me a every year I'm surprised on how passionate some of these people feel about their issues. I think sometimes they get a bad rap, and sometimes deservedly so. But there's also a lot of feeling there.
And there's also another legislative session in January. And we'll see you both there. And thanks so much to Catherine Lucy, Associated Press reporter.
Thanks for having me.
And to Mike Weiser with Lee Enterprises. Thanks for being on River to River.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer of talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River are available at iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us at any time at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.